Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon, and of course, our fearless producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. How you doing, Lee?
I am doing great. The big question is, how was yesterday at KSU, Professor Payton?
That's right. It is Professor Payton now. Well, Ryan was really the star of the show. It was a small, intimate group. You know, these are young people who have specifically made the decision to invest in themselves, and they are focusing on an entrepreneurship track out at Kennesaw. And Ryan and I were sharing some ideas with them on presenting without notes. And the way we went about this is Ryan has a big talk coming up next month.
A veteran-related talk, right?
A veteran-related talk. And it's partially sponsored by or brought to you by First Data, right?
That's right. Out at the First Data headquarters.
Yeah. So how did it go for you? Did you get some value out of that?
I did. I'm going to be working on my mental chain this weekend and also practicing some trim. Transitions and segues between that chain. So I did learn a lot. It was great to see you out there leading those young people as well.
Well, I'm glad you got some value out of it. I was concerned that the general sentiment might be, thank you so much, Professor Stone, but don't quit your day job. But so maybe we should get busy with
I think they'll
job.
Have you back. Yeah.
Well, this is going to be a fantastic show this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with Nick, the realtor. But first up on High Velocity Radio, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce principal business coach, consultant, and advisor with Combat Business Coaching. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Andreas Jones. How are you, man?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me,
guys. You got to get rock star close, Andreas.
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, guys.
Now, Combat Business Coaching, interesting name for a business. How'd that come about?
Combat, as it suggests, I'm an Army veteran. Mm-hmm. 9 years in the Army. I did a tour in Afghanistan and Iraq. And business is just bringing it all together.
So you see any similarities?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of crossover.
Really?
Especially from a leadership and strategical standpoint.
What about from a danger standpoint?
I mean, it depends who you talk to. I mean, there's nothing worse than losing your life. In business, you can lose your business, start over. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's no comparison in that light.
But the bullets are always flying, right?
Always.
Even if they're not quite as literally lethal. So what are you out there doing for folks? You're speaking, you're consulting, are you writing? What all are you doing?
So all of those and some. So my main focus right now is really getting in the trenches with small business owners. Mm-hmm. You know, we all know the failure rates of businesses, especially small businesses,
right,
you know,
80%
fail in the first 5 years. And that didn't sit too well with me, knowing that both my parents are small business owners. And that's the background I grew up from. And being around business and being in business, it really hurts to see that so many businesses are failing.
Right. So they put their heart and soul into these businesses and sometimes their whole life savings. So.
Oh, absolutely. And just a bit more background on me. I grew up in Jamaica. Jamaica is a country of population of about 2.6 million people, mm-hmm. with an 80% poverty rate. So your chances, wow, of success are very slim. And my parents, to provide for me and my six brothers, they had small businesses. So
in Jamaica
Jamaica.
How'd you get to America?
My parents moved here, and you know, we all came with them. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting to me because my folks were both teachers. They were in the public school system, and that was absolutely the last thing I wanted to do. But rather than get turned off by it, you kind of got energized by it and wanted to be in business. Yeah?
Yeah, at first it was by default, and then...
So you were helping them in their business?
Yes, yes. As you can imagine, I had a good summer job.
Whether you wanted to or not. So when you're out consulting with businesses now, how does that relationship work? Are you just kind of from afar kind of coaching them, or do you go in there and you're doing what you did for your folks where you're getting in there in the front lines?
It depends. Some people need that kind of outside perspective, mm-hmm. and some people need me to get in the trenches with them to figure it out. And so that determination is based on the assessment that I do from...
That's the first step?
The first step is to do an assessment. I got to know where we are before we know where we're going.
Right. So what does that look like? What are some of the questions you ask the business owner?
So first, I want to know, what are their product offerings? What are their marketing collaterals they have? How many customers they have? What's the value of a customer?
Do you find that they know that, or sometimes they don't even know?
90% don't know.
90% don't know. That could correlate to their failure rate, I would think. You don't know who's your buyer.
So it's a brand new conversation when you're asking these questions. They're not asking this of themselves already.
A lot of them are pleasantly surprised when I say, oh, what's the value of a customer to you? They have no idea.
Idea.
Yeah.
Wow. So why small business? It occurs to me that, you know, bigger businesses might have bigger budgets. Why the focus on small business?
Well, for me personally, a small business represents a lot. For my parents, I know it represented taking care of me and my six brothers. Mm-hmm. And for them, from my background and where we grew up, having a business was a huge deal. And so I recognize that for my parents and also other people out there starting small businesses, it represents a dream, a possibility for them. And to see such a high failure rate in that segment, it just didn't sit well with me personally. And my passion is to really help them out too.
What was your parents' business?
My dad had a car care center mechanic shop, and my mom had a restaurant.
Oh, so they were two separate. It wasn't even just one business. Yeah. Two totally different businesses.
Yeah.
You were busy.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he ate well.
Yeah.
Are there a few key leverage points that maybe virtually any small business can just pull down on that will make an immediate impact or a very quick impact?
And one thing any small business can do to make an immediate impact is do joint venture partnerships. Mm-hmm. It's a very effective strategy, but it's very underutilized.
Can you share an example of how you help somebody put one of those together?
All right. So I had a chiropractor as a client. Mm-hmm. He's wanting to get more clients in the door. And so the strategy we use is who else has your clients at this point? And a lot of and what we studied and found out that massage therapist had a correlation to the chiropractic services. So he partnered with them. And how we set it up is that if he gets a consultation as part of his offering for get the clients in the door, they also get a 15, 30-minute massage from the massage therapist. And if she gets one in her door first, she'll say, by the way, I have a chiropractor over here. He'll give you a 30-minute consultation to, you know, check everything out.
Right.
And so it's
so both sides win.
Both sides are winning, and it's no dollar spent.
Right. That's a great idea.
So how does the sales and marketing thing work for a guy like you? Because aren't there a lot of consultants and coaches out there? Isn't it a pretty competitive arena?
Oh, absolutely. It is. It's a very overpopulated market, to say the least. And so where I stand out is that I'm able to speak the exact language of the small business owners' their pains. Mm-hmm. I know it personally, and I know strategically exactly what they need to do. And so instead of speaking from an expert standpoint, I'm able to speak their language and relate to them.
Right.
And that connects with them more versus having this know-it-all guy come in and just try to feel like you're going to change everything.
Now, where does the military component come into play? Like, are you using some of the leadership lessons from the military or the organizational?
So absolutely. So I see the military component comes into two places. In the leadership standpoint of taking ownership of the business, of your development, of developing your team, if you have
right,
one.
Right, that make it happen attitude, yes. Right?
And then from a responsibility standpoint, in the military, I joined when I was 17. First day I joined, I signed the document for $100,000 worth of equipment. If you lose it, you pay for it.
Ouch. At 17.
At 17. So you had no choice but to be responsible and take ownership. So, and a lot of, you know, small business owners, they don't have that level of detail when it comes to knowing exactly and have a pulse of what's going on in the business.
Right.
So I want to get real tactical on running a consulting business for a few moments, if we could. For example, how did you land on a fee structure? How did you decide what you were going to charge and the way you were going to frame all that up? Or has that evolved over the years?
it has evolved. The consultant industry is not regulated. So there's no one set fee for anyone to charge. So it's based on the value you can bring and based on the perceived value of the market at that point. And
do you like that?
Oh, yeah.
All right. But someone's going to say at some point in the conversation, how much?
Yeah. And
do you duck and weave or tell them $3,417.28 or what's the best way to handle it?
I'll tell them, but in the sense that if they're looking at it from a cost standpoint, then I know that they're in the wrong mindset about what coaching consulting is. Mm-hmm. Coaching consulting is not a cost. It's an investment.
Right.
And so that's the differentiation I try to help them with, is understanding that even though it's this is my fee, it's not a cost to you. It's an investment, and here are the possibilities from this investment.
Because you're going to show them ways they can make way more money than whatever your fee is, right?
Absolutely. And if I can't do that, then I'm not a good coach or consultant.
And you're helping them already by showing them how to answer that question.
Yeah.
Right? So you're providing immediate value. All right, what about speaking? Because don't you ever get nervous just standing up in front of a big group of people? And they're expecting you to be smart, particularly if they wrote you a check, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the great paradoxes of my life. Been in the military, I jumped out of planes, did all these crazy things, and when I got out of the military, I was scared to do public speaking.
Maybe if you jumped out of an airplane and did the speaking, it'd be easier for you.
Probably would.
So how did you get over it?
Just keep on doing it. It's in the military, we have this phrase we call muscle memory, and it's just you keep doing the same thing over and over till it becomes second nature. And then that's the only way that fear disappears. Your first jump, you're going to be scared. You know, you do it a couple of times, then you know what to expect. You know where you need to pull. If you pull too early, this happens. If you pull too late, that happens. And so you learn along the way on the journey.
And then do you speak sometimes for free or for a relatively low fee if it's the right audience, like an association or something like that as a marketing strategy? Is that a good approach for a consultant?
If it's done strategically, I do it from a passion standpoint and from a business standpoint. Most of my speaking is done from a passion standpoint. It's just because I really, really want to help small businesses. And sometimes, you know, they're just the big problem for small businesses is that if you Google how to grow my business, it comes back at 168 million hits.
Right.
Sometimes I just don't know which direction to go. And I take those small opportunities for small talks to just kind of educate them, get them along the way, and just give them a good starting point.
Now, you mentioned two phrases that I think are interesting, tactical and strategic. Are there different types of marketing? Do they come into play in marketing as well, these kind of different tactics, as opposed to, like you're talking, tactically thinking and strategically thinking? Does that work in marketing as well? Are there some marketing tactics that are strategic as well as just tactical?
Absolutely. So there's a huge differentiation between those two terms, which a lot of people commingle. Mm-hmm. So from a strategic standpoint is why you're doing what you're going to do. And from the tactical standpoint is how you're going to go about doing it. So from a strategic standpoint in marketing, so you want to do social media marketing. Well, to what end are you doing social media marketing? And then the tactic is, okay, are we going to go on Facebook? Are we going on Twitter, LinkedIn, whatever other channel you want to use? And so that's the tactics, but the strategy is to figure out why you're doing it and to what end you're going to do it.
So a lot of times people don't think about it like they're, you know, their cousin tells them, hey, you should be on Facebook. And they're like, okay, I guess I gotta be on Facebook. And that it may not be right for the audience, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where the strategy comes in, because you gotta understand your audience before you start putting your message out there on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a billion plus people. You gotta figure out where your segment is.
Is that where you spend a lot of time kind of narrowing down the audience? Because a lot of times a customer or a business owner's audience isn't that big. You know, when you come down to it, you know, like if they're a mechanic shop, it's probably only the people who live or work in that area, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot of detail in, as they say, niching it down all the way down to that one customer. And the more you speak to that one customer, the more people hear their message.
Right.
So instead of trying to speaking to everyone at the same time, you're trying to find that one customer who needs what you have. And the more you direct your message to that one customer, then it gets amplified. Because if you connect with that one customer, you knock it out of the park on the service, there's a guarantee they're probably going to tell 9, 10 other people. Mm-hmm. And it just keeps amplifying and multiplying along the way.
So coaching, consulting, speaking, but you said you're doing some writing as well. Are you going to write a book? Have you written a book? What's the plans on that front?
So I've been a part of 5 number one bestsellers, written 2 personally and contributed to 3.
Wow.
So I stay busy, to say the least.
So you're well on that trade. Tell us a little bit about one of your favorite writing projects.
One of my favorite writing projects was my book, Business Leader Combat. And basically, it's how to win on the business battlefield and get an edge over your competition. And one of the strategies I discussed in the book is the strategic partnering. And if you look at the U.S. military from that standpoint, we never fight a war all by ourselves. We have strategic partners all over the world that helps us. Even though we're the best military in the world, we don't do it by ourselves, and you don't need to do it by yourself.
Right.
Because there's other resources you could leverage along the way, and that's what makes the U.S. military what it is. Versus if you look at a country like, let's say, China, for example, I mean, they have a bigger military than the U.S., but they don't have the allies to help them leverage and really do damage that we can do.
Right.
So there's certainly unmet opportunity that a business owner might uncover, discover through an exchange with you. How about common mistakes? You must see some of the same things over and over as much consulting and coaching as you do. What are a few common mistakes that a lot of us small business owners make that maybe you can call to our attention and we can start at least giving it some energy right now?
All right. So the number one mistake I see is from the marketing standpoint is trying to reach everyone in the audience at all times. Mm-hmm. And it's just not effective. It's just not feasible. You don't have the budget for it. And even the bigger companies, even though their audience might be bigger, but they have, it's a segment they're still working with. When you look at a company like Nestle, like every time they wanted to release a new product, they created a new business, a line of business to address that segment. Mm-hmm. So they had the coffee business, and then, we need the K-cups. So they did a K-cup business. Mm-hmm. But it's everyone who buys the K-cups doesn't necessarily have the machine. Some people have the machines at work. They want to use a K-cup at work. And so it's really understanding their segment and the market and where they want to direct their message is just a lot of problems that small business owners face, and they get depleted in energy and funds, and it's right, just frustrating.
They're just spreading themselves too thin, and then they're just going after too many people instead of just focusing, like you said, like a laser beam on the right customer.
Absolutely.
So you strike me as a life learner. What you're writing? What are you reading?
I read. So one of my favorite books is Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, and the second one is 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. And I'm just an avid reader. I love reading. And I'm a life learner. I get intrigued easily. So if I see this marker, I like just do a look up what makes the marker.
But these books that you mentioned, they're classics. You're rereading them, aren't you?
I am.
You're not just reading them. You're rereading them and applying those timeless principles to today's context.
Oh, absolutely. And, the first time you read it, you kind of get the message, but second, third, fourth time you read it, you start singling out and you start connecting with you.
Right.
I'll bet the same is true for some Andreas Jones books. All right. Before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you and have a conversation with you or someone on your team. And let's make sure they know how to get their hands on these books.
Okay. So the best way to get in contact with me is on my website, Combat Business Coaching. There you'll find email, phone number, all my social media links. And you can find my books on Amazon. Just search Andreas Jones. You'll see it and pop up.
And then on your website, there's a lot of information. You blog extensively, and there's a lot of your writing is available there, and tips, and you have things like that too, right?
Well, I am so glad you came by to visit with us today. This has been very informative and a lot of fun. Keep up the good work, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Hey, can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely.
All right, Lee, you ready for the headliner?
All right.
He's been very patient and don't think he hasn't been engaged. He obviously found tremendous value in what Andreas had to share because he's got like 2 or 3 pages of notes over here, but he has some wisdom to share of his own. Please join me in welcoming to the show Mr. Nick Dixon. How are you, man?
Oh, I'm doing excellent. How are you?
I am doing well. You're in the realty arena. Tell us a little bit about that world and what you're out there trying to do for folks.
Well, real estate is very interesting right now in the Atlanta market. We're seeing some things that we have never seen before. Housing prices are higher now than they've been in many, many years. And one of the things that is the major issue driving that is the lack of inventory. And when I say inventory, the number of houses that are available on the market is so low. So there are literally people at home sitting in houses that have no idea how much equity they're sitting on. There are people who are driving around in their neighborhoods waiting, literally waiting for houses to come on the market. And we haven't seen a market like this in forever. So this is an awesome time to be in the market for people who are looking to buy, because appreciation is still happening, for people looking to sell, and also for investors. I'm working with a couple of investors right now, and this is an awesome time to flip houses. You see an ugly house on the street, oh, this is a great time to get in and make some repairs to that house, put it back on the market, and sell it for top dollar.
Now, who are buying these houses? Because everything I read says young people don't like to buy anything that they want to rent. I see apartments popping up everywhere. Who are buying the houses?
That's an excellent question. So the thing that's most interesting about the millennials, as we like to call them. So I was born in 1981. So I'm like right on the cusp. I don't necessarily identify completely with the millennials, so I don't know why I fell into that
category.
I was
making Bond in 1981. I was a senior in high school.
So 1981 is really kind of the, I guess, where the start of the millennials are. So people who are my age and younger, they are interested in purchasing houses. And they're looking for houses close into the city that are affordable. And when I say affordable, we're talking about houses that are below $350,000, $300,000, $250,000 even, so that people have the down payment to be able to come in and get into these houses. Inside the perimeter, that is very, very difficult to find. So it's not that they don't want to buy. It's that the options that are available aren't very appealing to them. And you'll see a lot of the apartments that people are renting, they could have mortgages for much cheaper. Like, there are apartments for $1,500, $2,000, $2,500. I see people paying $3,000 a month, and that's going to some landlord that's lining his pockets, and he's, you know, gaining appreciation on that property when that young person could be doing the same thing. So there's a lot of different creative ways that people who thought originally that they couldn't do home ownership, that they can. And I think that's another gap that's there. It's not that they don't want to, but they don't necessarily know how to get started.
Now, right? What are some strategies to help a person with a down payment or, you know, the ability to even kind of open their mind to this idea of owning something and then flipping it or having it appreciate and then selling it for more when you are ready to go somewhere else?
I can't tell you how many buyers have come to me to say, I want to rent. I say, okay, let's sit down and talk. What's going on? Look, I want to rent. I don't have the money quite ready for the down payment.
So the down payment is what scares a lot of
people? That's what scares a lot of people. And sat down and said, okay, what field are you in? A lot of people don't know. If you're in the education field or if you're in the medical field, there's a program called the Georgia Dream. $7,500 will be applied towards their down payment with this program.
If they're a teacher?
If they're a teacher.
Wow.
Or if they're in the medical field.
Well, and I'm a professor. We established that at the top of the program.
At the top of the program.
Never shot at it.
Well, it sounds like we need to have a conversation after this meeting.
Well, I'll tell you what is coming into focus for me, and it really didn't dawn on me. It made perfect sense in our conversation with Andreas that education is a really important part of his life. He has to educate his prospective client before he can genuinely serve them. But you have to educate and inform as well. I guess I didn't realize that.
And really, it is more so a consultative approach. approach.
Yeah.
Because the first thing I do when I sit down with someone isn't start preaching and start talking and start selling. The first thing I do is I say, tell me about you. What is it that you want? What are your dreams? What is the most important thing to you? Some people say, I have kids. I got to figure out how to get them into a good school district. Some people say, I'm living in an apartment. I'm tired of having someone above me. I need to have some place that's my own. And really identifying what is the most important thing to that person. And then I want to help them to achieve that goal, that dream that they have.
Are for the person who's renting, are there any opportunities for them to rent a house maybe and then own it at some point in time? Or does it have to be like you're either a buyer of a house or a renter?
There are some very interesting programs. So as I mentioned, it's a great time to be buying properties. And I've gone to a few major economic forecasting events. And one of the biggest challenges right now is investors. And when I say investors, I'm talking about investors who have hedge fund money, billions of dollars, have no idea what to do with it. They're having a difficult time figuring out where to put this money to get a return on investment. So there are a few investors that I work with directly that will help buyers. Help people who are not in a position to buy to rent a house that one day they can own. So literally, if someone comes to me and says, look, for whatever reason, my credit score is not quite there yet. I don't have the down payment. I want this house that's for sale in my neighborhood. I want this house. I know I can afford it one day. I've got an investor who will come in, purchase that house for them, and then at a predetermined price, they can purchase that house at a later date.
That is very creative. Yeah. It sounds to me like everybody wins.
Everybody wins on that deal.
I want to do that with a boat. Well, it's a different show, a different topic for a different show. But
I have to check with them, see what we can do with the boat. That might not work.
So now, when you work, you must work with investors then. Like, do you have a service for investors as well?
I do. Before I got into the real estate industry as an agent, I was actually heavy into the investment world. So that was everything that I was interested in, was what makes the market tick, what makes it go up, what makes it go down, what's the difference between the house that's sitting on the market, the one that's not. And that's something I have a very keen awareness of now. So I've got investors that I have some very interesting techniques to go about finding properties for them. I'm a big technology nerd. So I've figured out some interesting ways to kind of sleuth my way through the MLS to quickly find properties that are under market value. And I also will get up in the mornings and knock on doors and find people who are interested in selling their house. So I do have investors that I work for, and we have quite a few properties that we're working on now to get ready to put on the market that we're super excited about. And at the same time, constantly looking for properties that we can buy now for cash.
Now, are there some neighborhoods you can share that are kind of up and coming?
As a matter of fact, there is a project going on around Atlanta called the Beltline Project.
Yeah, we've heard of it.
And there's a connection of bike trails and walking trails and public transportation that's going to be connecting neighborhoods across Atlanta. And if you were to look at property values across the Beltline, they're extremely high in almost every area except the Southwest Quadrant. And right now, in the Southwest Quadrant, there are some areas. I'll give you a couple zip codes. One is 30310. Another one is 30318. So we're talking about West End. We're talking about West Midtown. Those areas currently have a ton of revitalization that's occurring. You have investors coming in who are taking houses that are not in great shape, and they're turning those properties around. They're completely renovating them, and people are coming in and purchasing those properties. So if you want instant equity, going into those particular areas and finding something that you can put some money into, and we're talking about generational wealth. Because if those areas turn around like the other areas of the Beltline, in 10 years, you could be sitting on some serious zeros and commas for your family.
Well, it's clear to me that even with the advent of technology and the fact that, you know, even a layperson like me, I can go in on the internet and start looking at some properties that are available. But there's a world of difference in me sitting down and doing that and putting Nick the Realtor on that job. It's just that's night and day. All that said, though, and I asked a similar question from our first guest, but I think maybe it's the dynamics are the same. You're in a very competitive arena. How do you get to have this conversation with potential clients? Because there's a lot of folks out there either doing or representing that they do what you do, right? How does that piece work for you?
That's so true. There are so many realtors and a lot of great realtors here in the city. And what it's about, and I think Andreas covered it perfectly, is I'm not going for everybody. There are some clients when I'll sit down and talk to them and say, you know what? I don't think I'm the best person to help you based off of your situation, but I know someone who is. One of the talents that I have is I connect people to people and people to resources. So don't like to leave anyone hanging who has a problem. I like to connect them to what they need. And I work very quickly. So for somebody who needs a problem solved right now, that's the speed that I like to operate. I literally had someone come to me and say, I need a place to live. I found him a house in one day.
Wow.
Literally one day.
That's great.
So that's not for everybody. Some people don't like to work, you know, at super fast pace. That's the pace that I like to work at, work very quickly. So everybody's not a fit for everyone. But for the folks who are a fit for me, it's it's like a marriage, you know, we're working together. And to your point, there's so many resources online like Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com where people can go on and look at properties themselves. So that's not necessarily the area where I'm going to send you 1,000 properties every single day, because you can do that on your own. It's really a lot of the other things, connecting those dots to say, okay, I found this property. I think I like it. Is this a good deal? And I can help you answer those questions.
So what do you need more of?
What's that?
What do you need more of? Do you need more clients? You need more houses? Do you need more investors?
I, right now, am in aggressive expansion, business development. So looking for more clients. And it really doesn't matter whether it's buyers or it's sellers. Right now in this market, sellers are at a premium. It's very difficult to find people who want to sell their house because a lot of them don't know where they're going to go because the housing prices are increasing so much. So I'm sitting on quite a few buyers that we've literally looked at everything on the market and we're just waiting, sitting around waiting for new stuff to come on. And I'm going and knocking on doors looking for houses.
I was going to say, waiting is not your strong suit, I don't think, Nick.
It is not. I'm actively waiting. Actively waiting.
All right. So a website for you. What's the best way if somebody wanted to have a substantive conversation? Where should they go?
So I started a conglomerate called JD Palace, and I'm going to spell that for you. It's J, D as in dog, Palace. That's spelled P as in Paul, ALLAS.com. And on there, you can see a couple of other businesses that my business partner and I have started. Real estate is one arm of that. And you can also go directly to JDPalaceRealtors.com as well. And that's specifically for the real estate business.
And then it's important to note, because people do listen to the show all over, if you're thinking of relocating to Atlanta, it's probably a good idea to call you as well.
Absolutely. I've got listings all over the country. So I connect people, as I stated earlier, people to people and people to resources. So if you don't know where to start, if you're saying, you know, I'm getting ready to move from Memphis.
Right. If somebody's in Memphis is moving to Atlanta, they don't know Atlanta's Atlanta. They don't know there's a difference between Midtown and, you know, Alpharetta. They all sound like Atlanta to them.
Exactly. So I can sit down and have a conversation with them. Like I said, I love technology, so we can jump on FaceTime, we can jump on Skype and actually see each other face-to-face and have a conversation.
Well, Nick, it has been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio this afternoon, man.
Absolutely. I've enjoyed you all as well. This is fun.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, our guests this afternoon, Andreas Jones and Nick Dixon, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.